Now, I made a rookie mistake last week. At small group, I confidently declared that I would be preaching on prayer and proclamation today. Yeah, Sarah's laughing. Because it is a spiritual discipline. Prayer and proclamation is something we should be doing, praying and sharing the good news. And at that point on Monday night, I was speaking the truth. I even had a great quote from one of my favorite authors, Frank Laubach, lined up, which was going to serve as the backbone of it all. And I'll share it with you anyway, because it's so good. Frank writes, "I must talk about God, or I cannot keep him in my mind. I must give him away in order to have him. That is the law of the spirit world. What one gives, one has. What one keeps to oneself, one loses." So much wisdom in that short quote, but I'm not going to be unpacking it today. I'll leave that with you just to tantalize you slightly for a future sermon. Because a bit later on in the night, after small group, after that really lovely earthquake we had, did that wake anyone else up? Yeah. I just felt this little whisper from the Spirit. I'm not saying, by the way, that the earthquake was there to let God know. Sorry, let me know God has something to say. I'm not completely egotistical. But I just had this whisper that I needed to change my course on what I was going to preach on today. So here goes, Sermon Mark 2. And in many ways, I'm actually preaching what I need to hear, but hopefully it will resonate for you as well. But first, a question for you all. When you think about God, whether it's Father, Son, or Holy Spirit, what comes to mind for you? And hopefully it's not a deafening silence.
Love.
Love? Community? Hope? Trinity? Forgiveness? Patience? Mystery? Yeah. Sorry?
Faithfulness?
Yep. Peace. Awesome. Okay, another question for you, and this is not a trick question. But what is the opening line of the Lord's Prayer? That's the first half of it. Our Father. Yep, holy or hallowed be your name. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Another one of my favorite authors, Pete Gregg, has this great little line. And he says, it's easy to skim through the opening lines of the Lord's Prayer as if it's just some kind of pleasantry, a heavenly handshake or a ding-dong at the door, before we go into the real business of asking. I realized something about myself recently which has shaken me to the core a bit. And that is that I have leaned almost too heavily into the idea of God as Father, protector, friend, gentle, friend of sinners, arms wide open, that I have actually neglected to balance this with the sovereign authority of God. The God who loves me so dearly, who loves you so dearly, who loves everyone we encounter so dearly, is the same God who created everything. The same God who created the little dewdrops on the daffodils outside. It's the same God who created the very laws of physics that stop our world from just falling apart. That God is in charge and he loves us. It's not one or other, it's both and. It's mind-blowing. And it's really easy to miss that in the first line of the Lord's Prayer. Because we get our Father in heaven, yep, intimate relationship, loving, kind, strong. But then you get hallowed be your name. Hallowed is an ancient English word which we've kind of held on to because there's no real modern equivalent of it. But it basically means to be kept holy or set apart. But it also means that God's name, and therefore God himself, is to be the most uniquely valued one in the whole world. Now, we took a bit of a mini break from our sermon series last week, where, if you haven't caught up with it, we're digging into different spiritual disciplines. And Diana preached her first sermon here for St. Michael's, and it was really phenomenally good. And it wasn't actually part of our sermon series, but it could so easily have been, because her question, why are you here, speaks to the spiritual discipline of community worship, of that faithfulness, even if you don't feel like crawling out of bed on a Sunday morning, to gather together to worship God's holy name. But we are on spiritual disciplines. So the spiritual discipline of the day is called the game with minutes. Has anyone come across this one before? The game with minutes. Oh, this is fun. Blank stares. Hopefully I can introduce you to something new. Now, I shared a quote from Frank Laubach at the start of the sermon. And even though I'm not preaching on that particular quote, his writing on this is so influential. Now, Laubach wrote a book. Actually, he didn't write a book. He wrote a prayer diary, which has been published into a book called Letters from a Modern Mystic. And I've got a copy you can borrow if you want to have a read. It is well worth it. But Laubach was a missionary in a really remote part of the Philippines. And his book contains excerpts from his prayer diary, which he wrote during what his son describes as the hardest time in Frank's life. He was in a country where he couldn't speak the language, surrounded by people of a different faith to him, and with people who just were largely indifferent to his very presence. Yet night after night after night, Laubach prayed, and he was taught a really deep humility by God that both shaped his life and the life of those around him. But in his times of prayer, he became aware that he didn't think about God outside of his prayer times. He thought about God so little during the rest of the day. And so he had this kind of sudden awakening and committed himself to try to think about God for at least 1 second of every minute of every day. Does that sound easy? It should be, but it really, really doesn't. And he tried and he failed and he got himself up again and he tried and he failed until eventually he built himself into a rhythm. And it just transformed his life. The more he practiced it, the more he was transformed. On the 3rd of June 1930, he wrote that the most important discovery of his whole life is that one can take a little rough cabin and transform it into a palace just by flooding it with thoughts of God. But this spread onto the way that he viewed those around him as well, because just 12 days later, he wrote, "Now I know that every person we ever meet is God's opportunity. If only we were not so much of the time shut off from God. If only we were not so shut off from God." Because we can trust that God is always present with us. And so often when we're feeling empty or vacant or disconnected from God, that is a symptom of something going on in our lives. It's not a sign of God not being present. Now, there's a cartoon that I really love, which I'm going to share with you now, which speaks to that really well-known image of the footsteps in the sand. Just full disclosure, this is slightly heretical, so please don't tell the bishop I'm sharing this one with you. starts, "My child, I never left you. Those places with one set of footprints, it was there that I carried you." So far, so good. "That long groove over there is where I dragged you for a while. But one time, I hid you in that little sand hole while I got a hot dog." Yeah. I just love it, and it's not really relevant, but I just felt we needed just to lighten the mood slightly. Because I can hear you thinking, hold on a minute. Rebecca preached just a couple of weeks ago about ruthlessly eliminating hurry, about stop being so busy, stop doing so much, and you can sense I'm about to suggest to you, you might want to think about God every minute of every day. Some of you are looking slightly tense. Some of you are avoiding eye contact altogether. So just stop, take a deep breath in, and a deep breath out. Because this rule of life, or this practice, It's not about adding things to your life. All it is we are realigning our compass north, realigning our compass back to Jesus, back to the God who created us, who loves us, who created everything in the world, but still is present to every detail of our life. We're back to the Jesus who calls us to come and follow him, to walk with him, to learn with him, to carry those rhythms of grace. But how do you begin with the game of minutes? You begin slowly and tentatively and with oodles of forgiveness for yourself. 22 years after the excerpt I've just been sharing from Laubach's diary, he wrote a book which he called The Game with Minutes. I've printed a couple of copies off, and they're on the table down the back if you'd like to take one. Just have grace with it. It was written in the 50s, and so the language is of its time, but it really is worth a read. But the key to the game is to start slowly. Don't set yourself a resolution that you're going to leave church today and from now on, for the rest of your life, God is on your mind every minute of every day, because it's not going to happen. It's like learning to ride a bike, or it's like learning to play the recorder, should that be your calling in life. It's going to be hard. It's going to be painful. You will forget. You will mess up. But as with all these practices, you just get back on. You try again the next day. The best advice I can give you is to choose an hour during your day and commit yourself just for that hour to bring God into everything you're doing. If you're washing the dishes, you wash your dishes with Jesus. If you're walking down the street, you are inviting and praying God over the people that you see. You don't need to stop and talk to them, you're just praying for them. If you're writing emails, because God is actually king of emails as well as the rest of the world, imagine that God is sitting over your shoulder, or Jesus is sitting over your shoulder if that's easier, and imagine that he is reading the emails with you, that he is crafting the response with you. Or if you're an electrical engineer, or if you're an artist, or if you're a carpenter, or if you're crocheting, or you're in the garden, remember that God is the God of creation, and imagine that he is present with you, celebrating in your own acts of creativity and of creation. It shouldn't be a chore. It shouldn't be something that you have to stop and go, oh, I didn't think of God. It's inviting God in with what you are already doing. And you might need reminders to help you with this. So at your dinner table, have an empty chair. Imagine Jesus is there. You might need to have a Bible or a cross somewhere that you're just going to see it and remind you. You can be extreme like me and get a tattoo of a cross. Or less extreme, wear a prayer bead bracelet. That's a hard one to say with a stutter. Prayer bead bracelet. Just as a reminder. So something that you're going to see and draw you back to God. But your challenge for the hour that you set yourself, at the end of it, give yourself a scorecard, because it is a game. And see how many minutes you thought about God. It might be one, might be two, you might be amazing and do 20. But celebrate what you have. Try again the next day. See if you can outdo yourself and keep competing against yourself. This is a no-guilt question, but does anyone feel like they might want to give it a go this week? Let us know how you get on next week. And all grace if it is really hard, because it is incredibly hard. It's going to feel still, you are going to forget. But just to quote Laubach again, all who have tried that kind of abiding for a month know the power of it. It's like being born again from the center to circumference. It absolutely changes every person who does it. And it will change the world that does it. If this doesn't resonate with you, then there are so many other ways you can add prayer rhythms into your day to draw you back to God. One that I used to do for a long time was I'd set a reminder on my phone for midday, and regardless of what I was doing, unless I was in a really important meeting that I couldn't get out of, I would stop and I would just say the Lord's Prayer. Because Jesus lived his life being interruptible by people. So let ourselves be interrupted. Let ourselves stop whatever we're doing and pray. Lord's Prayer takes 30 seconds. It's not a huge thing out of your day. Or you could follow in the footsteps of Jesus and say the Shema 3 times a day and give thanks before meals. It doesn't actually say anywhere in the Bible that Jesus did this, but Jews of the time, it was pretty much standard practice that you would stop and you would say these set prayers. So the fact that there's nothing in the Bible that says Jesus didn't do it implies that Jesus did. Because the Shema is such a powerful prayer that centers us back on the divine sovereignty of God. It's like a strict liturgy. You don't need to think about it. You need to engage with it, but you don't need to come up with your own words. And this is the one that I'm trying to do. I'm trying to do this every time when I wake up in the morning and when I go to bed at night. It comes from Deuteronomy. And these words are going to be so familiar. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You must love the Lord your God with your whole mind, your whole being, and all your strength. So this is the challenge, the homework for every single one of you. This week, try something that changes your prayer rhythm. If you're not a person who actually has a time of prayer, add that in. If you're wanting to try the game of minutes, give it a go. Let us know. Or add a Lord's Prayer reminder or Shema or whatever it is. Just something that draws you back towards Jesus during your day. Because this practice of abiding is crucial. Because in some ways we are like glow-in-the-dark stars. You know the ones I mean? The ones that you leave out in the sun and then they shine at night. That kind of eerie green colour. Because for us, it's only exposure to the light that lets us shine in the darkness of our world. The Archbishop of York, Stephen Cottrell, writes, "Exposure to the light will give us the spiritual energy to make the whole of life prayerful. I believe the Christian faith will begin to have an impact in the life of our nation when Christian people become luminous in their faith. We need to become a church that glows in the dark." I love that. Let's be people and a church who glow in the dark. The game with minutes transformed Laubach's life and made him glow in the dark, being more present to God and more present to those around him. And I'm going to let him have the last few words. And he writes, "All I have said is mere words. Until one sets out helping God right wrongs, helping God help the helpless, loving and talking it over with God. Then there comes a great sense of the close-up, warm, intimate heart of reality. God simply creeps in, and you know he is here in your heart. He has become your friend by working along with you. So if anyone were to ask me how to find God, I should say at once, hunt out the deepest need you can find, and forget all about your own comfort while you meet that need. Talk to God about it, and he will be there. You will know it." Let's be a church that glows in the dark. Amen.